From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Sometimes smaller is better than bigger, and simpler is better than complicated. Right now, that just might be the case for solar power. Yes, large rooftop solar installations can deliver a good deal of electricity, and more these arrays are delivering enough juice to power a home and feed back electricity to the grid. But they're expensive, and they're a complicated system. Today on the show, you'll hear about a simpler and cheaper solution to generate some power from the sun. It's called balcony solar, and it's already very popular in Europe and parts of Asia. Now, it's not perfect. It generates a modest amount of electricity, and there are some safety concerns. But you'll hear from a nonprofit that wants to expand it, and an Oregon legislator who's trying to update regulations to make it work in our state. Solar power is getting cheaper, more efficient, and more widespread. In many nations throughout the world, solar is already surpassing electricity generated by fossil fuels. It doesn't emit pollution, it generates free electricity, and it doesn't explode. But solar adoption in the U.S. and Oregon is not as robust as it could be, and the initial cost is a big reason why. A solar array on one's roof is still very expensive, and if you rent, it's not like you can put solar panels on your landlord's roof. Today on the show, you'll hear about a relatively new entry into the solar market that is both cheaper and accessible to renters. It's called balcony solar, and it's exactly what it sounds like, a solar panel you can hang off your balcony. First, we'll talk to a nonprofit that's trying to expand the use of balcony solar all over the country and here in Oregon. Cora Stryker, the co-founder of Brightsaver. Cora, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, let's start off with this. Tell folks what Brightsaver is.
We are a nonprofit. We started a year and a half ago with this vision of bringing to the United States what we're seeing in Germany. So in Germany, you can go to IKEA, buy a balcony solar unit, bring it home, plug it in, and you are producing clean energy and reducing your electricity bills immediately. We don't have it here almost at all. We're just starting to see an uptick. And so we started with this mission of getting affordable solar energy into everyone's hands, including renters. And we are removing the barriers that make that difficult right now. And I'm happy to say we're well on our way.
Okay. So talk about balcony solar. Is it really that easy? I mean, you just kind of hang it up from a balcony or other type of a platform and then plug it in. Talk about how it works in Germany, and then maybe contrast that with any of the sort of, are there regulatory or just electrical impediments to balcony solar here in the States?
Yes. So in Germany, it's quite easy. It's been around for about 10 years. We have 4 million of them in use right now. No major safety incidents. And the technology has really evolved with the demand. It's funny, I was actually on a call very early this morning with a fellow in Pakistan who was talking about how they have their own DIY solar movement. It's different there because they have a different electrical system. And Germany also has a different electrical system. So what we're going for is something as easy as it is in Germany, where you just buy it at IKEA or even a grocery store. It's so ubiquitous, it's everywhere. You pay a few hundred dollars, you bring it home, you plug it in. It's really that easy. And by the way, it's called balcony solar because you have these beautiful images of these German apartment buildings where every single balcony has one, but you don't have to put it on a balcony. A lot of people put them in their backyards. It's really anywhere you can get a clear access to the sun.
Yeah. It sounds like it's tailor-made, you just described, for renters or apartment buildings or those sorts of things, which may not have access to rooftop solar if that's not part of the building, that this could be something that any renter could do. Do I have that kind of right?
Exactly. It's incredibly empowering for renters. I was chatting with a woman who lives in New York City a couple of weeks ago, and she says to me, I compost, I ride my bike to work, I really care about climate, I'm doing everything I possibly can, but I live in an apartment and I can't get solar. So I think there's a huge pent-up desire among, first of all, those of us who care about climate, but also those of us who are really struggling to pay our energy bills. And that's a huge group of Americans who simply have no tools in the toolbox, and this is an option for reducing your electricity bills and greenhouse gas emissions at the same time, even if you don't own your home.
Can you give us an idea of what a basic kit, what it can power? Maybe analogous to, can it power like an air conditioning unit or something like that?
Yes, it powers essentially one small-ish appliance. Now, of course, it depends on the wattage.
Sure.
So the very smallest systems are under 400 watts. Those mm-hmm. systems will power your refrigerator or maybe a small window air conditioner. We do have systems all the way up to 1,200 watts. And those systems can power quite a lot more because you're sending electricity into an outlet, into your home wiring, anything you're running at that moment, your TV, your router, your refrigerator, your air conditioner, all of that will suck up that energy first.
Okay.
So it really depends. You know, the best data we have is from Germany, and there it's about a 10, 15 to 25% offset of energy costs. Now, we expect that to be a little higher in the United States because we're at a different latitude. Mm-hmm. But it really depends on the size of your system. Is it oriented properly? Is it obstructed? How big is your apartment or house? The bottom line, though, is that it takes out a meaningful chunk of your electricity bills, though it will never be the whole thing.
Sure. Let me quickly reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Cora Stryker, the co-founder of Brightsaver. So here in the States, are there regulatory hurdles that need to be cleared? Or is it, you know, again, like, oh, because our electrical system is different and maybe there are code issues? Is that kind of the only thing that sort of stands in the way of this?
Yeah, two things. So there's a regulatory gray area, which has created a gray market. And what I mean by that is there are no rules explicitly on the books for these little systems. The only rules on the books are intended for rooftop or even utility scale solar farms, much, much larger, 5 to 100 times as large as little units. And that is a regulatory hurdle. That is reforming interconnection rules so that for these little systems, you don't have to have an interconnection agreement with your utilities. That is super important because if you have rooftop solar, say, you will be sending some electricity back to the grid almost always, and you should be paid for that. Mm-hmm. That's where NEM agreements come in. With these little systems, you're almost never sending electricity back to the grid. Why? Because they're small. If you have a refrigerator, most of us do, you're probably going to consume that. So we do need to reform the rules on the books that are truly regulatory artifacts, truly outdated. The other piece of it is the certification of the systems themselves. So we can't order a system from Munich, say, and plug it into our outlets because they're in a different electrical system. There it's 230 volts, here it's 120. So we have to have adaptations to the technology itself. Now, those adaptations have already happened. We already have systems that are optimized for our house wiring and our electrical system. But they are in a very immature market. There are only a few reputable manufacturers that have systems here, and there are many more disreputable manufacturers. And that's what I mean when I say a regulatory gray area has created this gray market, meaning you can go on Amazon right now and buy one of these systems that is not certified for safety on our electrical system. And that's what the bill does. It does those two things.
Okay.
The bill in Utah now, we had one in Oregon We don't anymore, but we do expect next year another one will be introduced. So all these pieces of legislation do two things. One, they update the interconnection requirements for these little systems, so you don't have to jump through all the hoops you'd have to jump through if you had a rooftop system. Two, they set safety standards, and that is incredibly important. We need to make sure that when people do this, they do it safely.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to sort of talk about a range, ranging from, you know, basically plugging something into an outlet all the way up to, you know, having to have an advanced electrician's degree. How easy is it for a general consumer to hook it up and start generating some solar electricity?
It's incredibly easy. In this country, you can today buy one on Amazon, bring it home, plug it in. Now, we don't think that's terribly safe. Those tend to be uncertified systems. We're at the beginning of this movement, and in a year from now, we're going to be talking about a totally different class of systems. Right now, it is very easy to plug in very low wattage systems, and it is safe to do so. Systems under 360 watts have been evaluated as safe to plug into any outlet in the United States. Now, systems larger than that could pose some safety hazards if they are installed by you or me, a person who doesn't have an advanced degree.
Okay. I'm wondering, too, about the issue of portability. You talked about how it's great for renters, and obviously renters tend to move from place to place. Is this a solution that's kind of portable, i.e. you can just take it with you when you move?
That's where we're headed. So in Utah, the first place where this legislation passed, it's called portable solar generation device. It has different names now and different bills, plug-in solar, balcony solar. So yeah, that's the idea, and that's what's happening in Germany and in other countries, Lithuania, Spain. You are a renter, you buy one, you own your own clean energy generation, even if you don't own your own home. You move, you unplug it, you bring it to your next residents. We're not there yet. Mm-hmm. The technology is not there yet. And we expect that we will be there within months to a couple years, certainly not a decade. We think about 2 years probably.
Okay. Cora, my last question for you is just maybe give us a general update about solar. I keep hearing that it's come down in price. I keep hearing that it's incredibly efficient, or a lot more so than early generations. And I'm also hearing that, you know, it's really growing as an alternative to carbon-based energy generation. Just give us an overall picture of where solar is right now.
Solar is astonishingly cheap. So I talked to a fellow from Pakistan today, and he was describing how in Pakistan you have this DIY solar movement. You have farmers in the rural areas who buy these solar panels, hire an electrician. Now electricians are much cheaper in Pakistan than they are here.
Okay.
And they set up these little DIY solar systems, and it has nothing to do with climate consciousness. It is only about saving money, and that is true universally, and it makes sense. Obviously, a PV module, if it's cheap enough, is going to be a cheaper source of energy from free sunlight than it will be if you go across the world, dig out oil, or even if you frack in this country. So it has come down in price at astonishing levels, even faster than people like me thought it would. And it just keeps going down. Battery storage, by the way, as well, keeps going down. That is really what gives a lot of us hope when it comes to climate, is the scientists are doing their jobs. They are building the technology that is more efficient, that is cheaper, and they're making it accessible to all of us, but only if our laws allow people to do it as they allow people to do it in other countries.
She's Cora Stryker, the co-founder of Brightsaver. Cora, really appreciate this. Thanks so much for coming on and talking.
Oh, it was great to talk. Thanks so much.
Now let's hear from a Corvallis legislator who wants to pave the way for more balcony solar in our state. State Representative Sarah Finger McDonald, a Democrat who represents Corvallis, welcome back to the program.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You know, as I understand it, you were one of the chief sponsors of House Bill 4080. Tell our listeners, you know, what that bill would do.
So it would set up sort of the regulatory structure to allow for plug-in or balcony solar. And these are small solar arrays that you can be hung off a balcony or on a fence or you put in a yard and deliver power into your home through an electrical outlet. Just like their name, they plug into the wall to send those electrons into the system.
So how does that differ from like maybe something more of us are familiar with, rooftop solar? It sounds simpler?
It is simpler because you can just plug it in. And it's a small enough system that it's not likely to be sending a lot of power back into the system. You know, I have rooftop solar at my house and on sunny days in the summer, I send power back onto the grid. And with the plug-in solar on those small systems, it's not likely that there will be much of any electricity that goes back out onto the grid. And what the bill would have done is taken away the requirement to have an interconnectedness agreement with your utility. You still would need to let your utility know that you have the system, but there wouldn't be, you know, the agreement of, you know, power credits and all those kinds of things that are part of the time and expense of putting in a rooftop solar system.
Sure. It sounds like Europe and China, these kinds of balcony solar seem to be extremely popular, seem to be doing well. You believe it can work here in Oregon?
I do. I actually looked up the number this morning. Germany has 1.1 million of these systems that they know about. They didn't actually start requiring that people report that they have them until they had already been in existence for a while. So they know they have more than that. And of course, they have a different electrical system than we do. Mm-hmm. But I think here, it's an opportunity for renters, people who don't have access to a roof. So even if you own your condo or apartment but don't have a roof, it would be a way to generate a small amount of green energy. It's an opportunity to build resilience. These, in addition to plugging into the wall, can include a battery so that you can you sort of bank some energy there in your battery. So it's about enough power to power something like a window air conditioner unit. So it takes away both some of the energy expense of cooling your home in our changing climate and some of the pressure on the grid that could happen as more and more people are doing things like installing air conditioners.
I see. There are other states that have done similar types of legislation. Is that correct?
Yes. So Utah was first, and Maine and Virginia have now also passed bills.
Okay. So I know the bill didn't pass in the last session. So is it dead, or is there is there second life for this? Talk about what the status is.
There's definitely life. There's a lot of interest. Judging by the emails that I get, Oregonians are very interested in having access to, Oregonians right now who are being excluded from generating green energy are very interested in participating. And we absolutely feel like we can deal with the safety concerns that were there in the first session. I think we just didn't have time in a short session to sort of explain this new technology. And if you look at things like portable generators that we have electrical code for, this is sort of a similar thing where it's allowing for power to flow into your house from an appliance. So I think I'm actually very confident that we'll be able to overcome the concerns as people learn more about the technology, and plan to bring it back. And I think we have a lot of support.
Yeah. Those safety concerns, as I understand it, that was kind of an issue. I think some perhaps folks who might represent electrical contractors and
Those
what,
electricians,
yeah.
yeah.
What was their concern?
So their concern was, I think, largely because these are new and we have not written the electrical code that's specific for these units. And at the time we were trying to pass the bill last session, the underwriter lab certification, so the safety certification for these units was still in process.
I see.
Now, every piece of these units individually has UL certification, but the whole thing does not yet, or did not yet. But I think as that certification is happening now, and as other states are adopting this technology, I think some of those concerns will be less worrisome.
Okay. Well, state Representative Sarah Finger McDonald, a Democrat who represents Corvallis. Always appreciate talking to you. Thanks so much for coming on and
Yeah,
explaining
thanks for
this.
reaching out. I'm excited about this.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, you'll hear about a new map in our community that shows where pesticides are used in large quantities and how close they are to your home. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.